Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizoan Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
All right, so good night, everyone. Thank you again for being here. So tonight, the title of my teaching, my offering, is the meaning of the gateless gate in Zen. So I just want to make a distinction. I don't want people to get this confused, what I'm introducing tonight, with a collection of koans that it's also called the gateless gate. I will not be going over any koans tonight. I still don't have the expertise to do that. So I just wanted to just make that clarification. And I would like to start the teaching for tonight with a story or an encounter between a master and a young monk. I love stories. I think I can learn so much from stories. They speak better to me than just when people are just giving me concepts. So as we hear, these encounters tend to be very rich and very powerful. So this encounter goes like this. Once upon a time, there was a Zen master called Hakuin. One day, a young monk approached him and asked, "What is the true essence of Zen?" Hakuin replied, "The true nature of Zen cannot be expressed in words." The young monk was puzzled and asked, "But how can I understand Zen if it cannot be explained?" Hakuin smiled and said, "There's no need to understand Zen. You are already it. It is like a fish in water, unaware of the water that surrounds it." The young monk was confused and asked, "How can I become aware of Zen if I am already in it?" Hakuin replied, "You must let go of your attachment to concepts and ideas. Only then you will be able to see the true nature of things. It's like wiping a dusty mirror clean so that you can see your reflection clearly." So, you know, in Zen, when we hear the different teachers, when you go on your own, learning more about this path in Zen, something that we learn is that it is only through practice, through this precious practice, that we can shed our attachments to concepts and ideas and realize the gateless gate. We already know that language and concepts have limits. We know that we need it. We know that we need language to communicate and that we rely on concepts to be able to make sense of things. But we have to understand that we cannot rely heavily on that, that we have to also understand the limitations that come with that. We learn through this, through this practice, through Zen, that Zazen, mindfulness, and being in the moment are the only way that we can truly experience life as it naturally is. When we're present, when we're mindful, we're able to really see things as they are. We also learn that we have everything within us. We learn that we're divine beings created perfectly and complete. When we say this, it's not to fill our egos, fill it up. It's not to make our egos bigger. When we talked about being perfectly created, perfectly and complete, and when we talked about our Buddha nature, what we talked about is this: if you see a child, like when they are with another child, they're fully present with them. They're not thinking about, well, you look differently. You look different. You don't look like me. You don't have the same color as me. You're from a different class, a different status. That's eventually, they pick that up eventually as they grow up, but that's not naturally how young children interact. They're just there with one another. And when we talked about that divine that it's in us, we're talking also about that ability to love, that ability to be kind and compassionate. That those are the traits that we were born with. And that's what makes us so unique and so perfect. The Buddha said that being human, it's one of the biggest miracles of life. So being born like this is a miracle. But sadly, what happens to us is that we miss the mark on how to truly be in life, how to truly be and live this life. We become conditioned and we just forget. This conditioning and often, you know, negative experiences that we have in our life have deluded us into thinking that we're not good enough. And then this idea of incompleteness, of lacking and separation, it grows in us and it takes over in a very pervasive manner. We sometimes don't even see it, how it's just taking over like a virus. These messages that we receive, or that we, you know, we think that we receive, sometimes, you know, people do things that we do get these messages, but what happens is they get embedded in us as a core belief system, and we accept them, that core belief system. We then end up accepting that system as our true nature or authentic self, which is not true. That's not who we really are. It's just things that we have picked up, you know, in life. Consequently, also what happens is when we encounter a message that is contrary to that belief system, that core belief system, and Charlotte Jokobek talks about that a lot. Actually, Daiko, maybe like a year ago, I don't know how long ago it was, but you did a very wonderful presentation on that, on one of her books that actually spoke a lot about that core belief system. But then our tendency is to reject that. We don't believe it because it's contrary to this core belief system that we have picked up on the way. So the teachings of the Buddha point to a truth that often we struggle to accept it. And we don't see that everything that we need is it's right there. It's right at our fingertips. So what is it that we want most of the time? We want peace, we want happiness, and we don't see it. We don't see that it's right there. Because things happen, you know. I'm not gonna say that it's all on us, but we have to remember that it is there. So that's when we need to slow down. We need to learn to tap into that is there and embrace it. So, you know, for me personally, I found it easier to see it in other people than in myself. I don't know, it's probably part of that conditioning that I'm talking about. I can see in others, you know, those qualities, special qualities that they have, or that, you know, that uniqueness that they have. And I think it's perhaps it's because I know my own shortcomings, or what I believe to be my shortcomings, and I give them more weight than what they actually possess. Our tendency is not to see what is right there, because we never think it's that simple. We always think it's more complex, more difficult. Our thinking mind tends to complicate things and make them more complex than what they actually are. And often we turn in our worst enemy. Stefan Bodian, in an article from Tricycle, I actually, you know, I was inspired a lot by this article in my presentation, and I borrowed some of his ideas. We know that nothing is new under the sun. But he says in that article, he says that the paradox of alignment is also the answer. I'm going to say that again. The paradox of alignment is also the answer. So what I see is that sometimes something is in us awakens, and there's a curiosity. We become curious about why we don't feel content. We start to feel this, you know, this unease, and we start to look with a curiosity. We feel that something is missing, like out of balance, and we start to look, to seek for what we think is missing. Then we come to realize that it's not missing. It is here. But what we have done is we have covered it up with so much junk that we cannot see it anymore. That's what we say in Zen. It's more when we come into this path, it's not about putting more, picking up more. It's the opposite. It's taking away these layers so that we can come back to this core, to this true self, authentic self. And because we have covered it up so nicely, then sometimes we feel that it's impossible just to bring it all back out to the surface. So through Zazen, we begin to see the patterns and to work through them. That's another beauty of Zazen. And sometimes what happens, especially when you have experienced a lot of trauma in your life, those things, they start to show up. And some people, they don't feel ready to work through those, you know, those experiences and that trauma. So some people feel afraid and they stop the meditation. But it's through Zazen that we can really do this work, this personal growth. And we can more clearly see what are those patterns in our lives that they don't really serve us any good. And we also start to challenge those belief systems that are holding us back. We begin to see with more clarity where happiness, contentment, and peace lies. And that's, I think, when we realize that it's not by getting a bigger house, getting a better job, going away more on vacation. Not that, you know, there's nothing wrong with having stuff. But we realize that those are not really the things that are going to bring us happiness, that there's more. So we, you know, again, we begin to see with more clarity where happiness, contentment, and peace lies. You know, of course, the stresses of life will get in the way. It will confuse and disorient us. But we can always come back, and that's the beauty of this practice. That's the beauty of Zen, that it's always available. It's always here for us. We can always come back, pick it up, and keep doing the work. We're not going to say, oh, wait, I lost my way here, and there's no way for me to start all over again. No, the practice is here. The practice is ours. So it would always be there for us to come back. Bodian, in his article, he says, you need to bring your whole being, not just your mind, in the process and allow the paradox to transform you from the inside. And that's the other thing. We're always looking out there. We're always looking outside of us to see what is, you know, for that thing that is gonna make me happy, is gonna make me see reality as it is, like Sunil said yesterday. it's not out there. We have to come inward. We have to look inside. Furthermore, he states that many Zen koan possess some version of this paradox. disorienting the mind and evoking an answer from another dimension of knowing. That's the beauty of koans. But this knowing is a different type of knowing. It's not that knowing that I get from that intellect, from the books. You know, it's more profound. It's one that comes from a place of clear seeing and wisdom. It's like we get a different prescription. I think when we start, you know, really getting wet and with all the teachings of Zen, and it's like our seeing is different. Again, I think it's the glasses, the prescriptions change. And we also realize that this ordinary life is fertile ground for practicing living in awareness. It's in this moment, it's in the life that we are experiencing that we can do this. And how is it that we can do that? So it's by being alert, by paying attention, and by being in each moment. And we know it's so easy to get distracted, right? There's so much stuff happening in the world, politics, personal things that happen. But we have to remember to always come back. It's like coming back to the breath, right? Coming back and finding what, you know, what is true. So personally, what I see that happens to me in the moments that I get lost is that fear shows up. And the fear that tends to show up on me is the fear of failure, the fear of messing up. And that, what happens then, I get more confused because my brain, you know, cannot function. And I lose sight and concentration. So I become overwhelmed and the struggle shows up. My anxiety rises and my ability to sleep and relax decreases. I also become irritable and emotional. And he can attest for that. He's my husband, Ben. So, you know, he has seen it. He has seen when I become deregulated like that because of life, the stress of life happening, how it shows up. So another realization that I have had, you know, with this practice is that this state of deregulation tends to happen because I take responsibilities for things that are not only my responsibility. I fail to realize at that moment when I'm in the midst of whatever is happening that it is a shared responsibility and an interdependency. I have come to understand that these learned patterns of behaviors have a reason for being. I know where they're coming from. And they came from being parentified at a young age. And, you know, I don't want anyone to think that I have bad parents, because my parents, I love them, they love me. But we need to understand that our parents, they also were conditioned. They also learned certain things based on their own experiences, correct? Based on the society, based on the culture. So of course my mom was parentified as well. And for her it was even more difficult than it was for me. She wasn't even allowed to go to school. So, you know, I adore my mother, and I say that she's my first teacher. So she needed my help growing up, right? And if you know, you know, parentification is when you pick up responsibilities that are not adequate for your stage of development. They're too big for you. But I think my father didn't realize that he probably needed to help more. And I'm not blaming him. I think it was part of what it is, the culture that, you know, men are supposed to do this, women are supposed to do that, right? So I was the middle child. The oldest was a boy, my brother. So of course, you know, the responsibilities fell on me, and because I love my mom, I wanted to help. So I embrace the responsibilities that, you know, I were given to me. And, you know, I think that's where these patterns, as I said, I pick up these patterns. And even though I realized that, I'm still working with that. You know, it takes a lifetime. We pick that up for, you know, so many years. Now, you know, it's going to take time to really let go of that. But what I know, it's, you know, deep inside of me, I know this truth. And I know that, again, it is a shared responsibility and an interdependency. I cannot carry it alone because it does not belong only to me. It never has belonged to me alone. And those are the things that we need to remember. Those are the things that I have to keep remembering myself. So when I looked, as I was preparing the teaching and I reflected on that, on, you know, on this parentification, I decided to do a quick Google search to look at what are the traits that, you know, show up in people that have been parentified. It's called a parentification reflection sheet. And I could see, you know, a lot of those behaviors showing up in me. So he mentioned like a list of seven. And the first one says chronic guilt when taking care of own needs. Two, difficulty saying no. Three, being a caretaker in other relations. Four, anxious when relaxing or being unproductive. Five, feeling overly responsible for others' emotions. Six, seeking validation through helpfulness. And seven, needing to fix or rescue people. And probably that list maybe sounds familiar to a lot of people. And you know, while almost many of these traits to describe me, as I said, I'm aware of them and I'm actively working and modifying my thoughts and behaviors. You know, I know, as many of you know, I'm a social worker that's what I do for a living. So, yes, it has shown up in many other aspects of my life. And, you know, I love being a social worker. So I think that's not a bad thing. But one thing that I can really say is that finding this path, I think it's the best thing that has happened to me. You know, I have been able to embrace it and to become it. And it enables me to really work through these layers of conditioning and to untangle myself. The tangles are still here. I'm not gonna say that they're all gone. But I feel that they have loosened up their grip on me. I think there's more movement. I can shake myself up a little bit more. I'm able to sit. I'm able to meditate. I'm able to be in the moment. I wasn't able to do that. I was always doing and doing and doing. I could never relax because I was always thinking, oh, I have to take care of this. I have to take care of that. I was like the Energizer Bunny. Have you seen that commercial? I think it was always until I would collapse. That was the only way that I would stop. It would, because I was sickly, you know, physically sick. So then I, you know, okay, there's a reason for me to stay still and not to be doing more. But now I know better. And I'm, yeah, as I said, I'm able to sit here and meditate and watch my thoughts and let things be. You know, I'm making progress. It's work in progress and it's continuous practice. And that's what we say. We cannot just say, oh, I finished this, I'm done. No, we have to continue this practice because there's so many layers that we still have to peel. So I am committed to this practice and to letting go of what does not serve. I know and realize that I have to do the work and that I have the tools needed. And I say tools in quotation because we know that in Zen, we're not picking up more. It's not a tool that I pick here and I'm going to apply. It's just a way of being. It's just being with things as they are. So we apply all of these teachings into our daily life. In a poem written by Rumi, and actually this poem was in the article by Stéphane Bodien, he described his own divine desperation as follows. "I have lived on the lip of insanity, wanting to know reasons, knocking on a door. It opens. I have been knocking from the inside." So Bodien says that judging from this poem, Rumi struggled for a long time to penetrate the paradox of his mind, but the door eventually opens by itself, almost in spite of his efforts, and reveals that he's been living in the secret chamber all along. Rumi's epiphany when he discovers that he's being looking from the inside out mirrors the surprise, relief, and delight of those seekers who wear themselves out attempting to unravel the paradox and drop to the ground exhausted, only to discover that they have never strayed from home, even in their most desperate moments. "No creature ever falls short of its own completeness," says Master Dogen. "Whatever it stands, it does not fail to cover the ground." And I wonder how Rumi came to this realization. Who helped him? What helped him to see that reality, the door or the gate that never truly existed? Nothing to pass through because it has always been here. Always open, never locked. A gateless gate. In many of the classic stories, Zen stories, and this is another thing that I love about Zen stories, usually in those classic stories, we see an encounter often between the seeker and an older person. And that older person is usually just being, just living life simply and ordinarily, either serving tea, sitting, and surrounded by nature. Finally, the seeker, out of exhaustion, stops, and the wise elderly points to what is right in front of the seeker. However, due to his attachments to an idea of how what they're looking for is supposed to be, they just miss it. All I know is that eventually, if we're curious, begin to look, and drop our attachments, we will see with clarity our true nature and authentic self. We will see the many possibilities inherent in each one of us. We will realize that, as an anonymous sage said, that which you are seeking is always seeking you.